Meeting on Environment and Natural Resources come to order. Apologize for session running a little later. Members are probably getting a little food before they get here, but while we're doing that, we can begin discussing the annual lands bill, Senate File 1123. Senator Scogin will move the subcommittee report, and then we will vote on that once we have a quorum. Senator Scogin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 1123, as you heard, is our annual lands and waters bill. We had a subcommittee, and here to help me kind of walk you through the different provisions in this year's bill is Kathy Lewis with the Department of Natural Resources. We'll maybe walk through each section and then come back. There are a couple pieces that we're going to want to have a little discussion on, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'm Kathy Lewis with the Division of Lands and Minerals, Department of Natural Resources. Just cover some of the items for you briefly. In Article 1, Section 1, concerns a small expansion of authority to the DNR to sell lands by private sale directly to parties who have inadvertently trespassed upon state land. It would require that they pay fair market value. It would not cover school trust land because school trust lands can only be sold through public sale. And it's an expansion of the boundary line resolution process currently found in 84.0273, and is similar to the direct sale process authorized for surplus trail lands under 85.015. Section 2 of Article 1 is from a bill.
Ms. Lewis, where do the proceeds go?
Mr. Chair, members.
Under this section.
The proceeds would be directed as provided in Chapter 92 for school trust lands and Chapter 94 for acquired lands. For school trust lands would go into the permanent school fund, university lands go into the university fund, and acquired lands would go into the land acquisition account to be used to buy other lands and natural resources.
So not the general fund?
Mr. Chair, that is correct. It's not for the budget balancing.
Thank you.
Section 2 of Article 1 is from a bill authored by Senator Saxon. It concerns the leasing of tax-forfeited land by the counties. It expands the coverage and terms of leases to authorize use of facilities needed for recovery of iron-bearing materials and mining buffer areas. And this is some new technology on the range that is taking existing stockpiling and tailings basins, going back and reprocessing the materials to recover further iron units. Section 3 and 4 are technical changes to correct the legal descriptions from deletions from state parks as provided for in legislation enacted in 2008. Property being deleted from Lake Chetek is a road. It will be transferred to Murray Township. The property being deleted from the Moose Lake State Park is being transferred to the correctional facility. Section 5 adds lands in two state parks. Subdivision 1 is Fort Snelling State Park. It adds 1.69 acres. It's currently DNR-administered land, but it's outside of the state park, and adding this will provide continuity to management of the park. Mille Lacs Cathayo State Park would have 194 acres added. Both tracts have known cultural resources. The parcel on Lake Onamia is state-owned land, is no longer needed for forestry purposes. The second parcel borders Warren Lake, will provide protection of adjacent wetlands, lakeshore, and the prehistoric burial mounds. Section 6 of the Article 1 deletes lands from two state parks. In Lake Bemidji State Park, we're deleting 2.59 acres. Most of this is privately owned land, but there's two small lots there, and they would be provided for possible future sale. And Great River Bluffs State Park in Winona County would have 17 acres deleted. These are privately owned lots within the statutory boundary. DNR is not interested in acquiring these properties in the future, and it's a management decision to release them from the state park boundary. Article 2 of the bill concerns the sale of DNR-administered properties and tax-forfeited lands. Legislation is required because lands border water or direct sales being proposed. For the trust land, the goal is to continue the sale of school lands to fulfill direction to secure maximum long-term economic return consistent with fiduciary responsibilities. sound natural resource conservation and management principles, and other specific policy directed by law. When we sell school trust land, the money goes into the corpus of the permanent school fund. For acquired lands, the goal is to continue the surplus and sale lands the DNR does not need, with the proceeds deposited into the land acquisition account and used to purchase land within the outdoor recreation system. When we identify these lands for sale, we are not identifying them for sale for the budget balancing bill. This is for land planned for sales future this fall or next year, and that would be for the land acquisition account. The DNR proposed and the bill authorizes the public sale of a total of 162 acres of school trust land and 313 acres of acquired land, and the direct sale of 42 acres of acquired land. In subcommittee, the bill added provisions regarding the DNR's direct sale of 23 acres in Cass County and 0.199 acres in Hinneman County. Those two added provisions are found in sections 2 and 9. The DNR was opposed to those changes, but the subcommittee did pass those provisions in law. Also included in Article 2 are bills from Kitson County land sale, tax forfeited land sales, Red Lake tax forfeited land sales, and St. Louis County land sales. These are bills authored by Senator Stump and Senator Bach, and were adopted in committee, and the subcommittee and the DNR have no objection to the bill. I can go through each parcel by parcel if the committee so desires. Otherwise, we'll stand for questions.
Tell me about the two parcels in Anoka County.
Mr. Chair, members, the first parcel in Anoka County is in Section 4 of Article 2. It's 20 acres of land that the DNR acquired for fisheries purposes but hasn't used for fisheries purposes. It's adjacent to a county park, and we actually lease the land for trails going through the area, and it makes sense to lease it to the city. It's currently leased to the city. It makes sense to sell it to the city, and they can use it for hiking trails and manage the property.
Where exactly is the county park?
It is in Ham Lake.
Where in Ham Lake?
Mr. Chair, we do have a whole series of maps. Would you like those maps?
Is that just for the Anoka County one?
For the Anoka County one, Mr. Chair, it's on 153rd Avenue Northeast, right off of Highway 65.
How close is it to Carlos Avery?
It does not border Carlos Avery, Mr. Chair.
How close is it to Carlos Avery?
Mr. Chair, I don't have that answer off the top of my head.
Okay. Would you let us know? Would you let us know?
I will let him know, yes.
And then the second one?
The second one is 40 acres of school trust land bordering Sand Shore Lake. And there is another map that is with that packet that will show you where that property is located. It's school trust land, and it does not border other school trust land. And it makes most management sense to put it up for sale.
The first parcel is the... Is there a covenant or agreement that it will be used as part of the park?
Mr. Chair, the language for the bill, we do have provisions for conveyance to the city, and the standard conveyance language would provide that it would be, what is the basis for doing it? We don't have language in the standard. The way we have drafted this language for Section 4 is that they would be paying us full market value. We could be adding provision in the bill if you so desire to provide that it has the specific provisions in the deeds that provides that it has to be used for public purposes.
Well, what about for the purposes of the county park, to add on to the county park? Is that what the discussions...
Mr. Chair, the property is bordering the regional county park, but it's actually under lease to the city of Ham Lake, and we would propose to sell it to the city of Ham Lake so they would continue to manage the property in conjunction with the county park, but as a city park.
So can we put that language in there, in the bill?
Mr. Chair, that would be satisfactory to the DNR to add that language.
So we'd have to say, for the purposes of a city park, is that correct?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Okay. So we'll work on that appropriate language. Then the Sandshore Lake.
Mr. Chair, that is a parcel of school trust land, and it is no longer needed for school trust purposes. We believe it's in the best interest of the trust to put it up for public sale.
This one does look like it's in the middle of some wildlife area. Do you know what the discussions were with that? Is that being sold to the county or the city?
Mr. Chair, this is school trust land. It would be put up for public sale. It cannot be sold directly to a unit of government. So it would be authorized for anybody who wants to come in and bid on it.
Is this a part of any other arrangements that are going on with trades regarding the trades and sales regarding Carlos Avery?
Mr. Chair, no, it's not. It's the DNR every year looks at its school trust lands and identifies are there management activities that generate revenue. And we went through, this is a parcel that I believe is managed by forestry, and we identified that it is not otherwise generating revenue, and so in the interest of the school trust, it would be in the best interest of the school trust to put it up for sale and generate some revenue for the school trust through sale.
I don't know if the map is, I don't know if I'm interpreting the map correctly, so I don't want to, overstate anything, but it kind of looks like there'll be a development in the middle of Carlos Avery if you sell this.
Mr. Chair, I don't have that kind of information for you. It's a parcel of school trust land in the city of Bethel area. It's not, I don't believe it's part of the WMA.
Okay. What's the history? Why was the school trust before? What kind of income was it generating to date?
Mr. Chair, this parcel is quite a bit of water area. It has some road area going through it, very little forestry. I don't believe it was generating any revenue in recent years. That's one of the reasons we're putting it up for sale.
Let's come back to this. Other questions? Can you tell us what the some of the language changes regarding mining are? I think they're primarily in Article 1.
Mr. Chair, there are two bills brought by Senator Saxog that have been incorporated into this bill. Article 1, Section 2 is the first provision, and that is a provision that concerns the county's authority to issue leases on tax-forfeited land. The counties currently have authority for what we're talking about for leasing tax-forfeited land for tailings basins and stockpiles. And what this bill does is it allows them to also use it for a facility for recovery of iron-bearing oxides. This is the new technology that is looking at taking the stockpiles and tailings basins and recovering further iron units from the property. And then it's also looking for a buffer area needed for the mining operations. And this ties in to the particularly to what's called SR Steel now, which was first Minnesota Steel Industries, and then their new facilities that's up on the range. So that is the first article, first section.
Senator Saxog, do you have more background on it?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. A little bit. when Ms. Lewis starts talking about something they're looking at in the tailings basins, in fact, they're doing it right now. Magnetation right now is in the midst of the process where these tailings are through a – actually, it's not a chemical process. Just it's a bit of a magnetic process, and it takes these tailings out, kind of purifies them, and sends them on to, in this case, Mesaba Nugget, which is over in the old LTV site, and the other use, of course, is Esser Steel, which right now is in the process of clearing its land for its plant. And it's just important that these particular lands be cleared and be made available to them.
So this is authorizing the sale, or it makes the sale, and these are county forfeited lands?
Mr. Chair, the property we're concerned in this section are tax forfeited lands administered by the county. And the county would enter into a lease. They would not be selling the land. It would be a lease, and the lease would be subject to approval by the Commissioner of Natural Resources.
Okay, so this language...
So, Mr. Chair, it's the length of the lease that we're dealing with here.
All right. So this language authorizes the state to lease these lands to the county for these purposes for this longer period of time.
It's the county to lease it.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
The county. It's for the county.
Right. Okay. Other questions?
Do you want to deal with
this? Is that the only thing that has to do with that issue in the bill? Is that the only section?
Mr. Chair, in Article 2, Section 19, Senator Saxog's bill, another bill was added to this bill, and it concerns proceeds from the sale of tax-forfeited lands in Itasca County. And that originally arose last year in connection with a land exchange between Blandon and the state. And then the county's authorized, it's authorized for the Minnesota Steel Industries project. So it does have a mining link that started that process for that deal.
Mr. Saxon.
So, Mr. Chair, the idea here is that the proceeds from those exchanges and those sales can be used to buy additional lands of like quality.
Do any of the sales or transfers in this bill in any way go to accounts other than school trust or the land acquisition account?
Mr. Chair, there is a provision here concerning the Guthrie Forestry Office. And last year the legislature said that when the DNR sells an administrative site, the proceeds go to the facilities management account. And in the facilities management account, the DNR is authorized to buy land for administrative site, improve administrative site, or buy an administrative building. So there is one provision in here that money would go to the facilities management account. And then, there's tax-forfeited parcels in here. The other provision here is the Wayzata parcel, which is Section 2 of Article 2. And that was authorized last year that the DNR could sell the parcel. And the DNR has been working with the city to sell the parcel. We've been exchanging offers and counteroffers. And we have been planning to, and we still plan to put the proceeds to meet the budget balancing bill of the 6.44. So that is one provision there that we would be providing proceeds go to the $6.44 million requirement.
Where in Wayzata is that?
Mr. Chair?
It's right in Mr. Chair, it's right in downtown Wayzata.
How big is it?
It's 0.199 acres. Do you like maps of that one?
Does it fall under the definition of the outdoor recreation statute.
Mr. Chair, no, it does not. It's been an acquired parcel that is part of a, it's between a gas station and the parking lot. It's not been actively administered by the DNR, and it's part of a new development proposed with a major financing. And so we have, the state owns a very small piece of it, but it's not part of the outdoor recreation.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson?
Mr. Chairman, I just might correct it. It is not part of a new development. It is public land. There's the new development is actually a redevelopment of the adjacent property. But this is a piece that is essentially a drainage way. I can show you from a large-scale map what it looks like. It's 25 feet wide and about some over, just a little bit over 100 feet long. And what the city has planned for the last 10 years was to straighten out this street, which has a dangerous intersection here, and straighten it out down through that. The city has a drainage easement because it isn't an open ditch anymore. It houses two stormwater pipes, one transferring filtered clean water from an upland pond into Lake Minnetonka. The other one is collecting the stormwater from that lower area and transferring it to a pond where it's filtered before it will go into the lake. So there's nothing that can be built on it. A street could be put over it. But it is, and what the issue was, part of because of this, the DNR needing money to solve this budget challenge they have, is that they had it appraised and appraised it at a square foot rate for retail space. So their charge was $390,000 for that parcel, for that piece of land. And that was, you know, not acceptable. The city did offer $50,000, but that wasn't accepted, and I think they've been, you know, bartering back and forth. But the reality is part of their justification was that the city had approved this redevelopment and at a fairly large, you know, a large value redevelopment by Presbyterian Homes that will have housing and some retail space, replacing an old shopping center that would be removed. And a lot of hardcover would be removed, so it's going to be improvement of that whole area. But the city is the one that needs to build the road, to make change the road, not the developer. And just a week ago, the developer has announced that they are delaying for at least a year because of the market conditions, and they are not going forward with it. The city would not be able to build the road until they would get some of the tax increment from the project as things goes online. So it may be a couple of years before the city would even have any money to do anything, you know, to either build it, much less buy it. And the loss of some of the funds from the delay of the project has left the city in the hole right now in their regular budget for the year. So there will be no money this year if you're going to continue down the negotiation price that would help the DNR solve their need to backfill into that area. There have pieces of land like this. It's not been uncommon in the past, as Mr. Knopf shared at the subcommittee, that they have been transferred to another public entity with the assurance that they, as our statute that was passed last year stated, that if the land ceased to be used for providing public use or abandons the public use of land, it's going to revert to the state. So I think it is very justifiable to request that it just be transferred for no consideration.
It's kind of a side example. You know, it's not a huge issue for me, but it's kind of a side example of how even in the metro, certain parcels, as small as they might be, have natural resource value. As was stated, this is a drainage area. Now, your city's doing some other things, and what I'm hearing from you is that whatever happens, that you're the drainage situation is not going to change. But it's just another example, you know, when we're talking about with that land sales to the general fund bill, that even the smallest parcels are not obsolete. They have value. You know, maybe this isn't the right-on example, and it's not in the outdoor rec statute, but it just kind of highlights that discussion again. Senator Saxhog.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And you outlined, I think, the first issue, and that's if we're going to tell the DNR to go raise $4 million, that, you know, they really can't afford to just let every little parcel of land go. But you know, I mean, I'm sympathetic to this whole thing. But the second thing is you know, I think you do have to be a little careful of just giving land away. I think we were, maybe somebody was hoping here, and maybe we should be doing it, that, you know, if there's an amount that we can decide on, we ought to stick it in the bill and proceed that way, rather than either just give it up and then I'm fearful that we're starting to set public policies that we're gonna give things away, even though we're gonna tell the DNR they got to raise money,
Are you suggesting that in some of these land sales we should establish a floor for the price?
I don't know what I'm.
Okay, Mr. Chairman.
Sarah Olson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, after our last meeting, my tack was to go and talk to the governor's office and see if there was anything being done to take that load off from the DNR. I mean, that's what has driven this behavior. I don't think there'd probably be any question at all of this being, because it's useless for any other purpose other than the, you know, the pipes that are there, and you could put a street over it. As to why there has to, why it couldn't be transferred for no consideration, and I really hope that I'm not sure how much land that you have yet to be able to sell that would, you know, put you in a closer, you know, closer proximity to that goal, which is the end of this year. And the reality is, if they haven't sold land to reach, what is it, 5-6 million, and where are you at this, in the area, neighborhood of 3 million, that it has to come out of the hide of the department. You know, it was selling public land in general, but the reality is that most of that is under the jurisdiction of DNR. And I think that just is a terribly unfair thing to do to that agency, because obviously, as Senator Chaudhry believes and came forward with a bill that if it had any recreational purpose, it was not to be allowed. So since most of the land that they have is really for that purpose, or else they're managing forestry lands for a lot of it for other funds. I did learn that the Department of Finance is attempting to see what they can do to relieve that. I haven't. This was just at the end of last week, so I haven't had a chance to find out but I'm going to keep tabs on it, because I really think it's unfair and it clouds decisions here. I don't think we should make decisions based on that, because that would be out of character for the policy of land sales.
Yeah. And whether we require them to sell it or not, the proceeds of this sale in Wayzata could go to the facilities account, or could go to the acquisition account, as opposed to the general fund, which could help other facilities, even if one is determined to be obsolete. It's my understanding that the governor's supplemental budget has a delay for this, so hopefully we can talk about this issue more. I don't, delay or not, I don't think we should sell lands in the public in the outdoor rec account under the outdoor rec definitions. But again, I mean, look, whether it's outdoor rec or not, I mean, these things have value. And so, you know, for drainage, even though you don't recreate in it, let's just say the city did not have that pipe system there, it would still have value for that clean water activity. So I think it was a poor decision 4 years ago in terms of our natural resource. We save money by using nature and these lands for our environment. Anyway, so this it's good discussion. Unless there's something critical, Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, just briefly, the governor's budget, supplemental budget language does contain language that would extend that deadline for those land sales from 2009 to June 30th, 2011. So I'll be talking about that in the Finance Committee, but I wanted to make sure everybody was aware that the governor's budget recommendations does contain that provision right now.
Does this bill have to go to Finance? All right. Okay. Further discussion. On Senator Scogin's motion to adopt the committee report.
Do we just start? No.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Anderson, did you have your hand up?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, and I apologize. I'm in two committees at once, so sorry I missed the discussion. I assume we went through and there was a justification for all the sales that are in here. I'm looking at the Section 12, page 23, 10 Mile Lake. Can you explain that one to me?
Mr. Chair, members, this is a school trust parcel, and what we have done is identified particular school trust parcels where we're not otherwise generating revenue, and we identified this as one of them that it's in the best interest of the trust to sell the parcel. It's currently managed by forestry, and it's not generating revenue.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure if the same explanation was offered on most of these. The LCCMR actually had an opportunity to visit this lake this past year. And it just jumps out at me because we saw this lake and we heard about it's very unique, it's very beautiful, it's very pristine. And it has some unique features to it. It's a very deep lake and very, very clear and has some unique biological characteristics. And the county has done some really innovative work in protecting it. And so I'm just pulling this out. And to me, it maybe is an example. I guess the explanation is it's not generating any revenue. Well, maybe it would be good to keep that land undeveloped for the protection of a pristine lake, because I assume once it's sold, it's going to be developed, and it's obviously very valuable for development. But is that sort of why we make these decisions, just to sell it because we don't have any other specific plans for it, right? And it could make some money because it's on a very valuable lake? But doesn't that make it all the more valuable to
hold on to it? I had the same question on another parcel as well. Ms. Lewis, what's the particular situation with this Cass County parcel?
Mr. Chair, members, this parcel that we're going to be selling, it is very close to the lake boundary, but it's actually not on the lake. And we do have parcel where we do have looking at water access site for school trust land. Stepping back on school trust land, one of the things, and I know the legislature's been looking at school trust issues in recent years, part of our school trust responsibility is to look to generate income for the school trust. That's part of our fiduciary responsibility. We have to look at sound natural resource management also. And one of the things is, if it's a parcel that's best suited for keeping in a natural state, the state can spend money and condemn the school interest and actually pay off the school trust in that manner. If you're creating a water access site, the water access can be paying a lease rate to the school trust to generate revenue. And so it is an issue that we do look at. These parcels do go through a scrutiny in the department for looking at natural resource concerns, and we identify parcels that we feel can be sold to generate revenue for the school trust and are still watching out for our natural resource concerns.
How close is this parcel?
Mr. Chair, it has zero lakeshore frontage, but you can certainly see it from there. It's one of the maps in your package.
Mr.
Chair, Cass County, 10 Mile Lake.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson?
Mr. Chairman, why does it say on 23.25 the land borders 10 Mile Lake? It says it borders it, and you said it doesn't.
Mr. Chair, Lewis. Members, what happens is we're breaking a parcel apart. And when you have a parcel that you're breaking apart, you will have If it borders the parcel itself, like say Government Lot 6, borders the lake, and you're breaking it apart under the statutory interpretation, you're going to have to get legislative authority to sell. So we're not selling the part that's bordering the lake, but part that's going to be left does border the lake.
Mr. Chair, before too long, we'll be voting on saving land, acquisition, and rehab. I'm troubled. Why are we here today selling land? Something I must be missing in this operation.
I think Ms. Lewis and the department make a fair point that under the school trust statutes, they have a fiduciary responsibility. This is just what I'm hearing, that they have a fiduciary responsibility to at least propose we do this. Now, because it's in a bill and it requires legislative approval, it's our choice whether to agree with it or not.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Sir, follow
up. Mr. Chair and I look through it. I can see the one on Lake Chetak because that's been a problem forever alongside, because I happen to know where that one is.
Mm-hmm.
But some of these other ones, I'm going to have very hard time supporting.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman. Okay.
Senator Olson?
Mr. Chairman, for these types of parcels, is the market value holding up? I mean, these are tough times for selling land. If we're talking about acting in the interest of the school trust and other funds, is this the time to be selling? For the best return into that fund?
Well, that is a very fair counterpoint. Is it in one's fiduciary duty to sell land at a time when prices are and values are much lower than they have been in the past? Ms. Lewis, do you have any thoughts on that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, certainly one of our fiduciary responsibilities is to be making sure that it is in the best interest of the trust to sell the land at that point in time. And by your authorizing the parcel to be sold doesn't mean that the DNR is going to act immediately to put it up for sale. We are certainly watching the market value. What we are seeing in the appraisals is that the Lakeshore properties, the recreational properties, what we're coming in on, the appraisals are stable. And agricultural land is doing pretty good. The appraisals are showing that the parcels that are looking at, a developer would come in and plat the property, those have decreased significantly right now, and that may not be the best time to sell those types of parcels, but recreational parcels are. When we're looking at the trust fund parcels, DNR's planning a spring sale, and we're planning a fall sale. And for our spring sale, we have very few trust parcels identified. We want to be very cautious in our approach that we make sure we are judging the market as well as we can for offering the trust fund parcels for sale. The fact that it's authorized here, it's up for legislative review and approval, but it's not an automatic that we're going to turn around the next month and sell the parcel. Get the parcel ready for sale and watch the market.
Senator Bickerman?
Mr. Chair, are we going to have time to take a look at these parcels of land? I'm going to agree with Senator Anderson because I was up there. Senator Merriam gave us a whole tour of that great piece of property. I said, some of them, okay, but I'm not so sure we should give a blank check to all this. And maybe that's not what you're going to do. But if you are, then I know what I'm going to do. So I just think we need a little more time to get a little more information. That's my personal opinion.
Okay. What I'd like to do is, if there are any more questions from members on particular parcels, let's take those now, and then let's have a discussion about how we want to proceed. Senator Sharon?
I would be curious. Thank you, Senator Chaudhry. Could you describe to me Section 8, public sale of surplus land, Blue Earth County?
I'm sorry. Which one was that again?
It's the Blue Earth County. I'm looking at the...
Section 8, Mr. Chair, I believe in Article 2.
Page 20.
Okay, Ms. Lewis?
Mr. Chair, members, this is called the Hog Island WMA. It's a wildlife management area that near the city of Garden City, and it is 11.69 acres. It's a parcel that is wetland. You can access it going underneath the highway there. It's a parcel of land that our wildlife management people in the region looked at, said it's not being used for wildlife management purposes, and it would be suitable to be disposed of. The money would go into the land acquisition account and be used to buy other wildlife land.
And similar to some of the other questions, is that a discussion that for which authorization is needed, or is this these 11 acres something that DNR is prepared to move on? They've had more concrete discussions.
Mr. Chair, this parcel is before the legislature because it does border the Watonwan River, so under the statutes, the legislature has to give approval to sell, and the DNR would be looking to sell this. We've identified this potentially in the spring sale or the fall sale.
Mr. Chairman?
Okay. Senator Olson?
Mr. Chairman, are there any parcels in here that help the DNR toward that that general fund budget goal, or are all of these dedicated to various funds?
I think we asked that question before. I think it's just the Wyzetta property that does that. The rest of it goes into the land acquisition, school trust, or facilities accounts.
So, Mr. Chairman, where in the world do they find land that they can sell for general fund purposes? I mean, a 0.19 acre thing in Wyzetta isn't going to cover several million, even though they were trying to come close to that. You just can't squeeze blood out of a turnip. So where will they, what land can they sell that will get them there?
Well, I think that was kind of the issue we discussed. First of all, why is it just the DNR? The statute does not address just the DNR needing to do this.
Mr. Chairman,
however, somehow administratively it has fallen on them.
Well, Mr. Chairman, 90 what plus percent, 95% of the state public lands are in DNR's jurisdiction or domain, and I presume that some of the highway, if it was purchased as a part of a project that involved federal funds or even state funds, the sale of it would have to go into the highway user fund. So I'm not sure what they would have to contribute to it.
It's
something quite difficult for
it. It goes to how we see how we value these properties. I mean, if we were to sell, well, we're going to sell this off ramp, to fulfill this general fund. People say, oh no, we need this off ramp. We need this off ramp. We use it. Somehow, it's gotten our other public lands have become devalued to the point where, it's just. We don't drive on it. We don't have a building on it, so it must be useless. And that's the value of the discussion we're having. Yeah, they have all those lands, but the MnDOT has a lot of lands too. They're called roads. And so why aren't those being sold off? There's a value judgment being made that somehow these are less valuable, less useful than a road, for example. And so... and that's what we have to – the discussion we've had in this committee is centered around that. They provide a lot of value, even the little drainage ditch, even the little parcel – even that 0.1 acre probably has some value. Actually, it did because Ms. Lewis testified that it had had some drainage value, I think. So – I'm not going to make a big stink of those, but I think at least for the purposes of the outdoor rec definition statute, we should at least hold on to those. We value those things. Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Lewis, I'm interested in the parcel in Blue Earth County by Garden City that Senator Sharon inquired about. I believe you said it was wetlands, and I'm curious who might be a potential buyer for this property. I'm looking at the descriptions, and they started like Block 1, Garden City, and go to Block 2, Garden City, Block 12, Garden City, to Block 11, Garden City. And I'm wondering if say a group of duck hunters wanted to buy this parcel and duck hunt on it, if they would even be allowed to do that because of its proximity to the city. Now, maybe it, and my thinking is this may not be of high value to the Department of Natural Resources, but who else would own it and make the appropriate use of the property?
Ms. Lewis.
Mr. Chair, Senator, this is not a high-value parcel. We have appraised it, and it's less than $50,000. It is one of the issues when we've been looking at parcels to sell is, in many instances, wildlife management areas have had the cities grow up around them, and you cannot have hunting in them any longer, and they do not fulfill their purposes. And we're identifying some of that in the metro area. In this area, if the proximity to hunt to the city and the other occupied residences could not make it available to hunting, it would not be interested in those parties. Quite often when you have some of these small parcels, your most likely buyer is an adjacent landowner, and they add on to the land that they buy. This is what I would classify as not a prize parcel for selling. It's one of those parcels that you can put up for sale and see if you find buyers. It's not one that's automatically that a lot of people are going to come in the door. But people look for parcels for recreational use. And it's a parcel somebody may look for recreational use, or adjacent landowner would be the most likely buyer.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Okay. Senator Sharon?
I'm still talking about the Blue Earth County land. This is near Garden City. It can provide, though, even though it's not for hunting, it can provide access to the river for canoeing and for other recreational activity. And my understanding is if this were sold, it would not be available to the general public for access to the river. So, you know, I think this, for the amount that it's purchased, its value to our area. Well, is in the process of making this determination, do people in the area have input into this in terms of its value to them and its provision being staying in Blue Earth County rather than being sold and then the money going to a general fund that's purchasing property that may not even be in that area or another part of the state?
Ms. Lewis?
Mr. Chair, it might help for me to step back a minute and talk a little bit about our process. There's two things that went on. The department went out to its regional staff and said, please identify land to sell. And there's three purposes right now. One is for trust fund purposes. One is to be surplus land no longer needed for natural resource purposes. And there's also the budget balancing bill requirement of 6.44, which state agencies as a total need to raise about $4 million. What you look at for this parcel is a piece of acquired parcel. And what we would do under the Chapter 94 process is we first offer to state agencies and the University of Minnesota for sale. If they do not want it, it then is offered to local units of government at appraised value. And they have 2 weeks to say, yes, I want it, and I will pay the appraised value for it. If that does not happen, then we actually go through public sale. So that's the normal acquired parcel process for offering a parcel for sale. So the county would have opportunity to get it if they want it.
Senator Anderson, then Saxogy.
Mr. Chair, the problem I have with this whole process is that nowhere do we consider the value to the public, to the natural resource, to conservation, to bordering lands. I mean, that's not even part of the equation, it sounds like. And maybe we need to change the law to make it part of the equation, because it seems to me that's just not accounted for in any of the recommendations we're getting in front of us.
I mean, what could the Garden City School District learn from an 11-acre wetland? You know, there are science classes or math classes. Probably a lot. Senator Saxog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My comments are about Article 2, Section 9, private sale of surplus state line bordering public water in Cass County. This public lands bill, on Section 9, we're going to be selling, making a private sale to a private party, and, you know, it's not to a public body. It's not for any type of public purpose or public good. And at the very least, I think that we ought to act on it individually not as part of a public lands bill.
It was Section 9?
Section 9 of Article 2.
What was the... what's the issue there?
Mr. Chair, the Carlson family, there's a Carlson family that owned this property back in the 60s and 70s, taken by eminent domain.
That's that whole discussion.
They would like to purchase it back.
All right. All right. Okay. So, well, first of all, this is the most intellectual discussion we've had on a lands bill that I can ever remember. So compliments to the committee. And thanks to the DNR for being able to answer questions and about the process. It's been very, very helpful. I think the questions are wonderful. I think the discussion is wonderful. We're getting bogged down, though, and we started 25 minutes late. This just needs to go to the floor. If we lay it over, are we still going to be okay? Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Anderson.
That's all right. All those Scandinavian names. Mr. Mueller is reminding me that traditionally this bill does go to the Finance Committee. I don't know. Are you considering putting this in the omnibus bill or not?
No, I think the lands bill was just going to travel on its own. Sometimes this goes to the Finance Committee, sometimes it doesn't. And so what we can do is, what I'd like to do at the very least is lay this over on the policy. And then we can sort out how this relates to previous bills that have gone to the Finance Committee. If there's,
Chair, do you need a motion for this?
No.
Parts of this are good, but parts of it
And I was kind of concerned about the Anoka County Sand Lake piece as well. And then we've got we've just got all sorts of things to go through here on this. But I think it's been very good. I mean, we've been really paying attention to the lands issue for the first time that I can remember, and I think it's wonderful. And so we can maybe the committee can talk amongst ourselves in the next day or so, figure out how we want to approach it. We will study how this bill is similar to bills that have lands bills that have gone to the Finance Committee in the past. If it's similar for similar reasons, we'll send it there. If not, it's all the more important that we work things out before it goes to the floor. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to that point, I mean, we've been great conversation. I agree with you, Mr. Chair. However, this thing came in bill form to us, $6 million the DNR was charged with. I don't even know when. Does anybody know when? Was not anybody on this committee involved in that process? If so.
No.
If they weren't, we need somebody from that particular era to help us out, because we've really put them in a...
Well, actually, Senator Ingebrigtsen, that's kind of a high-up discussion we're having. It actually, this bill doesn't really affect that. Really, most, the 99% of these sales are happening the way they always have. They will go into the land acquisition facilities or school trust account. There is that one little parcel. I don't think that is going to the general fund. That's not a huge deal. It's not even part of the outdoor rec statute. I don't see a big issue there. It's just the... But now, so that money issue I don't think is part of the bill, but I think what we're now getting into is why they need to be sold for any reason. And so I think it's great that we are considering this for the first time.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Scogin.
Thank you. And I know we typically don't really care what the other body is doing, but we are up against some committee deadlines, and I don't know if what we've done today constitutes meeting that, but they have not had full committee hearing on the House side yet.
No, I've consulted with staff, and if we lay it over today, we're still okay.
Okay.
Senator Saxog?
Well, the question on that, Mr. Chair, if we lay it over today, I still have some question on when we're going to take it up again. We brought up a lot of different issues here. There's some parts of this bill that are absolutely necessary for business to go on.
I'm not saying we should not proceed with the lands bill.
And whatever we do, we'll make committee deadline.
Okay.
Assured of that. Senator Kielash, and then I'm going to lay it over.
Mr. Chair, Senator Scogin, I believe you've already gone through this in your subcommittee to value these lands, and I'm not sure if you looked at it from a natural resources point of view or not, but it seems to me we're redoing some of what your committee did, and just wondering if you can comment on that.
Well, Senator Kielash and Mr. Chair, yes, we had a subcommittee on lands and waters, and we had intense and in-depth discussion on a couple of provisions in this bill, but certainly not to the level we are having here, especially on the stuff that the DNR brought to us. So this is unusual.
Yeah. Thank you. Senate file 1123 is laid over. Senator Scogin, will you take the chair, please?
Is this the first bill that we've done?
That's interesting.
Yeah.
First bill.
I bet.
Oh, by Friday. Same here. 1225.
Members, we will turn our attention to Senate File 1225. Senator Chaudhry.
Staff could, first of all, we have a delete all amendment.
The delete all is being handed out.
Then for our discussion, it's very important that we refer to this PowerPoint that's been printed out for members. We'll pass that out too.
That's what I need.
Members, Senator Chaudhry, let's take care of the delete all first. Senator Chaudhry has moved to amend Senate File 1225. Questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
So, Mr. Chair and members, and the reason I wanted folks to follow along on this PowerPoint is because it has pictures of what illustrates the issue here. And it's very, particularly for folks on the committee who may not do this activity a lot, it's very instructive, and it goes to the reasons why we're interested in making this change in law. Last year, we, in our game and fish bill, in a compromise with the House, we commissioned a report from the DNR on the issue of what would be the effect of allowing hunting firearms to be uncased, particularly during the act of hunting. The DNR issued a report. There was disagreement with some of the some items of that report, and the these bills were introduced. What we seek to do in this bill is regulate the actions of ethical, law-abiding hunters. And that, of course, represents the vast majority of sportsmen and women in the field. It allows hunters to have uncased and unloaded long guns, not handguns, and unarmed bows in a motor vehicle. This is the crux of the issue that in slide number two. This picture of people in the back of a truck are ethical, safe hunters, and they're currently acting, however, illegally. What these folks are doing in the back of this truck is going to a field to hunt in their hunting drive. Now, or they may be coming back from the field. And so what happens is, and this could be deer, this could be pheasant, what happens is people are dropped off. People, they drive to a field, oftentimes many cars, oftentimes one or two. And then they go off and they
drive to the other end of the field. Then they get, because all of them are there, there's no one to pick them up. So one person walks back, or maybe there's one person behind, and they come in and pick everybody up. Sometimes that works out well. You're coordinated. You get the everyone puts their cases in the back of that person's car, and then that guy comes, and then you can case your firearms and drive back. Most of the time, because of the way hunting works, is you end up in a place that's not designated, that's not predetermined, because that's where you end up, topography, whatever. And you either leave your, like what happened to me in Montevideo this year, we all left our guns on the side of the ditch and then got a ride back, and then I drove back and drove along the side of the road looking for where I'd left my gun, and then picked it up and cased it. And this has become what actually happens in this process is that people who are just legitimately hunting become in violation of the uncased firearms rule. And then even if you do have your case, you haven't zipped it all the way, or you're going to another field and it hasn't been zipped it all the way, people get tagged. Okay, that's the law. The law is being enforced. Fine. But I think there's a policy question of whether we want that activity to be so severe, have such severe consequences. Now, there's reasonable concerns on the other side. We want to make sure there are not unintended consequences on the policy either. We don't want poaching. We don't want to have unloaded firearms around schools or those types of things. People in the metro are very sensitive to that type of thing. And if you haven't done this a lot and been comfortable with the tool of hunting, it can be a little scary. So what we've tried to do with this bill is carve out the exceptions, and I think because of these exceptions, the bill in the House has progressed through the committee process pretty well. I think it's passed four committees in the House. There were concerns with law enforcement initially in the initial hearings. It was amended, and now the bill appears to be sailing through. So those changes that were made. And are reflected in the amendment we just passed are that if local units of government have a discharge ban, you would not be allowed to have an unloaded firearm in your car. School property, of course, wherever you are, school property, game refuges, while shining, and while using night vision equipment. That goes to the poaching issues. And then in slide number three, more pictures of what is, what's going on in this activity where people are illegal. So then if you turn the page, more reasons. At a shooting event, shooting contest, often participants are safely transferred from competition areas to other competition areas, golf carts and ATVs, and they don't have their cases. Participants work on their firearms while in a motor home, a camper, or while traveling to one. Those activities are illegal right now. So that's why we're seeking to address this. If you take a look at what some of the concerns are, for example, duck hunting. Duck hunters must unload and case their firearms when retrieving a wounded bird in a boat. That's another example of why we need this bill. So you have to case it. unload and case while you drive to the bird that you've just shot, if you're propelling the boat forward. It also creates a safety hazard with repeated casing and uncasing a wet firearm in a boat to dispatch waterfowl. And a firearm in a wet case leads to potential damage of the firearm. That is not only a it's not a best practice of care of your firearm, but it's also a safety hazard. The jamming occurs with rust, and that's not over time. That can happen overnight. And as a result, the Minnesota Waterfowl Association supports this bill. On the pheasant and deer hunting, during a drive, one truck will drop off a group of hunters at one end of a plot and another picks them up to go to the next location. It's illegal even in the same field or across the road. So a hunter who walks out to their stand in the morning without their case cannot accept an offer of a ride back to the deer shack. And that's why Minnesota Deer Hunters Association supports this. What are the concerns?
Senator Chaudhry, yeah. We have a question. Would you want to take it now? Or
let me go through it real quick.
Okay.
Then we'll take questions. In the DNR report, it stated that states without cased firearms have a significantly higher firearms-related accident rate. However, the DNR report compared Minnesota to uncased and loaded states, not uncased and unloaded, as we have in this bill. The examples given are with loaded firearms. An unloaded firearm cannot discharge.
This is stupid.
Presently, a firearm cannot be loaded while or in a motor vehicle, and accidents are more likely to happen during the loading and unloading of a firearm. Another concern, it will undo years of hunter educations, two-step process of unloading and casing a firearm. Nothing stops hunters from casing a firearm or the DNR from teaching it, number one. And number two, we're not stopping the casing of firearms. We're not stopping that. This is only in these situations that we're allowing it. And, of course, hunters still always have to do the most important thing, and that's unload the firearm. Other arguments. An uncased gun in the car will lead to more break-ins. Rarely do we make laws making legislation about valuables left in cars. People generally do not leave valuables in plain sight. North Dakota and South Dakota report no alarming statistics about break-ins to cars caused by their uncased laws. Finally, this allows for hunters to have uncased and unloaded long guns in the vehicle. The bill regulates the actions of ethical law-abiding hunters, but we need to arrest those that perform illegal actions. And an unloaded firearm is a safe firearm. It will not increase accidents regardless of whether it is cased or not. So the North Dakota and South Dakota conservation officers state uncased firearms do not endanger their officers. They think it's more dangerous to check a group of hunters in the field with loaded firearms than loaded ones in a vehicle. Local units of government cannot have different firearm ordinances than state law, except for discharge bans, so they're still allowed to have that. And hunters already responsible for knowing where they can legally discharge a firearm or bow. They're already responsible for that, so it doesn't matter whether they know or not. If they're in a city that has a discharge ban and it's in their car, unloaded or not, it's still illegal. And which is no different from anglers. You're responsible for knowing the regulations. It is a primary ethic that hunting from a vehicle and poaching will still be illegal, and you'll still be arrested if you poach. And people that fire from a vehicle or poach have not and will not let a case law stop them. And at least in North Dakota and South Dakota, They don't believe that it has increased illegal activities. So, final is the, you know, is the back picture, and you know, this is what we're talking about. If these were all unloaded, which people do all the time, this would remain a safe activity. It would not make ethical hunters illegal anymore, or lawbreakers. And if someone does have a loaded gun in this situation and it goes off, they would be cited. They would be breaking the law. That's not what we're asking for. We're just asking for safe, ethical, but reasonable and rational hunting practices.
Senator Pariseau.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to ask why on picture number six, or the slide number six, while shining, isn't shining outlawed? I thought shining was outlawed years ago.
Mr. Chair.
Why would we allow people to shine?
Senator Chaudhry.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pariseau, shining is allowed for wildlife viewing. Now, there has been some discussion about restricting that as well, but at the moment it is legal, and so we want to make sure that someone who is shining does not also have a firearm in their car, even if it is unloaded.
Senator Kelash?
Mr. Chair, Senator Chaudhry, how many people have been tagged for this violation that you're trying to correct in the last, or on average for the last few years, if you've got those numbers?
Senator Chaudhry?
I think some of the testimony will reveal that. I think that's an important number to look at. If these witnesses don't know it, I'll make sure I look behind me.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Chaudhry, I noted that on page 2, line 2.7, there's reference to that this is within the boundaries of a home rule, charter, or statutory city with populations of 2,500 or more. What is the reason for defining the size of the city in relationship to this?
Senator Chaudhry?
Which page are you on?
I'm on page on the
2.7 on your delete all. 2.7. Size of the city.
Is there a reason why? Is the question is there exception for cities under 2,500?
Mr. Chair and Senator Sharon, the reason is that even though a city may not have a discharge ban, we still want to make sure that if a city is 2,500 or more, that's still not allowed in that size of a city. It's a value judgment that's made in this bill about the population of a city, and as the population of a city grows, we are we are concerned about this type of activity in those types of cities. So that's the value judgment we made, even if they do not have a discharge ban.
If some people who would like to testify.
Introduce yourself.
Good afternoon. Introduce yourself and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Brad Schultz. I'm a retired conservation officer. I was a conservation officer for a little over 30 years. I now reside in Lindstrom. And I was asked to come here today by the House author of the bill, retired Officer Cornish, to answer any questions you may have and to put my input into this. And would you like me just to continue on, or would you like to ask questions?
If you have some testimony you'd like to warm us up with, we'd appreciate hearing from you.
I'll try to do that.
Go ahead, Mr. Schultz.
I'm a waterfowl hunter, and as Senator Chaudhry indicated, it is an extreme annoyance and difficulty when you're hunting waterfowl to have to case and uncase your firearm when you're running a motorboat, which is a motor vehicle in this state. You go out after a cripple, and the people in this room that are waterfowl hunters know of what I speak. You hate losing birds, and you can have the best dog in the world. Unfortunately, we don't all own the best dog, and you still have to run some of those birds down. And trying to get close to a bird with that boat, uncase the firearm, in theory, have all forward momentum stop before you put shells in the gun and shoot the bird, you lose cripples that way. And that's always been what I felt is a drawback of the case firearm law. As a conservation officer, I'll be honest, I wrote the law. I used it when, you know, it worked to my advantage as an officer. When questioned about it, I would follow the state party line on it that, you know, we needed firearm cases on our firearms because they wrote the check and they were my boss. I disagreed with it for a lot of years. As a conservation officer, you know, I assure you, I wouldn't be here today if I thought that there was one issue in this bill that would make life more dangerous for a conservation officer or any police officer. Conservation officers probably deal with more people with firearms in a week in the fall in their job than the average law enforcement officer will come in touch with for several years. At least I know I did, and there's a simple premise that you always have to follow. Every time you're dealing with a firearm, you have to treat it as it's unloaded. I mean, some of the most, I'll use the spookiest instances I've run into is when I've taken a gun out of a case, opened the action, and a shell comes popping out. Some instances, the guy who put it in there was more surprised than I was, I think. But, you know, I mean, it's, you have to treat them as they're unloaded, as they're loaded, and then you
as
look.
As they're loaded.
Thank you. And I may have misspoke. I don't know.
That's what I was saying.
We know.
But anyway, that's you. And I wouldn't, if I had any inkling that this would make life more dangerous for law enforcement officers, I'd be fighting a tooth and nail. I said, I don't think it is. I don't think it's an issue. I don't see it at all.
Questions for Mr. Schultz? Senator Kielash.
Well, just to follow up on my question, in 30 years, how many tags did you give for people having uncased guns in their boat searching for crippled ducks or geese?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kielash.
Mr. Schultz.
Probably not a whole lot because I'd why. If the guy was running and gunning, I'd hammer him for that if he couldn't find a duck to shoot at. But if he was chasing down a cripple truly, you know, I would probably not write him for that. I'd write him a warning or, you know, we'd have to a little conversation once we made the contact. But it's, you know, I've said not all officers are duck hunters, and, you know, I understood it. I tried to work from the perspective of what was good for the sportsman and what was good for the average guy.
Mr. Chair and Senator Kielash, just to follow up on your earlier question, I'm informed there were 331 uncased firearm citations last year.
Senator Pariseau.
I was going to ask whether Mr. Schultz disagrees with the large game hunters having a pistol while they also hunt bow for large game in case of charging animals, for instance.
Mr. Schultz.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pariseau, no, I don't. As Senator Chaudhry indicated, you're out deer hunting. You know, I didn't necessarily want to delve there. If you look back in my history, you will find that I befell the state of Minnesota before I became a conservation officer, exactly an example that he did. I drove, dropped a whole bunch of people off. We made a drive. Everybody's gun case was in my truck, so I hooked the ride back to get the gun case, and I don't leave my firearm laying in the ditch for anybody. You know, but that's the way it worked. I mean, I took my chance and took my lumps, but I don't think that a group of deer hunters riding back in the back of the truck are, you know.
The reason I ask is because I initially got more requests about that particular point from large game hunters, not from waterfowl or small game.
Mr. McMillan, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you very much. My name is Don McMillan, and I am president of the Minnesota Outdoor Heritage Alliance, otherwise known as MOHA. I also represent Safari Club International on the MOHA board. I've had a fair amount of experience hunting in states and countries that do not have case requirements. I've hunted in probably about eight states in this country that do not have that requirement, five countries in Africa, and probably a couple in Europe where it's not a requirement, and it certainly doesn't seem to be an issue. I'll keep my comments fairly brief because Senator Chaudhry and this last speaker certainly covered a lot of the things I wanted to talk about, but a couple of things. I read the DNR study, and it was well done, and I have some disagreements with some of the conclusions because, first of all, we're dealing with some extremely small numbers here. If you notice, the numbers in that study are very small in terms of the number of accidents that occurred over a, I believe, a 10-year period, if I'm not mistaken. And I think there were a total of 56 in five different states. You know, you can look at numbers, and they can fool you a little bit. For example, there were three accidents of that type in Minnesota and two in Wisconsin. So you could say Minnesota is 50% more dangerous than Wisconsin because we had three and they had two. But again, you're looking at small numbers. Even if you take all of these numbers collectively from all the states, my background is somewhat scientific. I taught at the University of Minnesota for a number of years. I taught microbiology. I'm a dentist by profession and taught that various parts of that at the University of Minnesota. And in scientific research, you've got to have numbers before you can come to any conclusions, and there really aren't any numbers here. So what I'm seeing is not really a trend. There's not enough numbers to draw a conclusion. There's a lot of other issues here. For example, it'd be interesting to know out of these people in North and South Dakota, and they didn't include some of the other states, incidentally, that don't require a case, like Wyoming, Colorado, Montana, Utah, et cetera, et cetera. But it'd be interesting to know if these people in the state of North South Dakota were residents from Minnesota that had these problems. But, you know, from a practical standpoint, I've been hunting since I've been 12 years old, and as you can look at me, that's a heck of a long time. So I've seen it, and I will tell you that the cardinal rule that we all follow, and it doesn't change that as far as the law goes in Minnesota, the firearm has to be unloaded in that you cannot have a round in the chamber. And that's the first thing we teach when we teach firearm safety, the first thing we observe as safe hunters. You don't bring a gun in the house, in the tent, or into a vehicle if you've got a shell in the chamber. That's just very basic. And whether or not you have a shell in the chamber, or whether or not the gun is cased, if you've got a shell in the chamber and you're putting it in out of a case, that can be extremely dangerous. In fact, more dangerous than if you just put the gun down, as a matter of fact. First of all, you don't even want to get to that point. You don't want to get to that point. The other issue that I noticed that came up in the DNR report was the comment, fair chase. That's something that we all talk about. There's always a little disagreement, even in the hunting profession, about what is fair chase and what isn't fair chase. Well, this has nothing to do with fair chase, because it is illegal and should be illegal to shoot an animal from a vehicle. And shooting an animal from a vehicle is not fair chase. This doesn't change that. Whether or not the gun is cased really doesn't make any difference, because it's very easy to take a gun out of a case in a vehicle and shoot from a vehicle if you are a violator and not obeying the law. So those are my comments, and I'd be very happy to answer any questions if anybody has them. Thank you very
much. Senator Vickerman, thank you, Mr. McMillan.
Mr. Chair, I've been hunting longer than you have, and I'm not going to tell you.
I'm glad I found somebody else.
But it's always been a rule, and it was my dad's rule. Guns never allowed in the house unless it's unloaded. I made the mistake, and my dad took the gun away from me for 2 weeks, and that was the worst hell I ever went through. I just couldn't have it.
Rabbit shooting.
But I'm trying to teach my grandsons and all my boys, obey the law, put it in a case. We hunt up north. It doesn't bother you one bit to take it out of that case. We go from our cabin on the four-wheelers. They're strapped on there. We don't even leave that out there without doing it. So I'm trying to figure out what is the big problem. Well, I've been out in Dakota, and I've been in Montana. I know how there's nothing scares the hell out of me more than seeing a whole bunch of rifles laying on the back of a pickup out there, and they race up and down those roads. I want to tell you how fast I can load my shotgun. I can load that in split seconds if I don't have it in a case. Driving down the road, my son's driving down the road, there's a pheasant. I can jump out, load that gun, and be in the ditch in 2 seconds. If I have to have a case, I can't do that because it takes a while. I don't know what the problem is. We obey the laws. We don't even, well, I'm not going to vote for it because I don't think it's necessary. I worry about what we're trying to teach our young generation of hunters. But my dad taught me, never carry a loaded gun in the house, case your gun, and obey the laws. And that's exactly what all my kids and my grandkids will do.
To the witnesses, when was our case law first instituted? in Minnesota. Does anyone?
It's been a long time. 1918.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Senator Chaudhry.
Mr. Chair, Senator Vickerman, the issue that we're trying to confront is that people are trying to obey the laws, but what happens is the question today is whether this law is as critical to ethical hunting as keeping a gun unloaded. And in our education, it is, in our hunting education, it is central. The central point is keeping the gun unloaded, pointing it away, all of that. Yes, we talk about casing it properly, but that's really we're following the law as opposed to as much being a safe, ethical hunter. Remember, when we're out in the field, that's when we're hunting, and that's where we talk about proper loading and unloading. That's the central point of ethical hunting. And so the problem seeks to solve situations like what I had last fall. I was bear hunting. The guide took us out to the bear stand. I loaded it. It was a small stand. They didn't want us bringing anything with, because anything we bring with could make a sound. And so I left the case in his truck. Fine. Problem is, at night, when they came to pick me up, a different guide came. The other guide was picking up someone else. And so he didn't have my case. He didn't have a spare case. Didn't think of it. Wasn't doing anything illegal. Wasn't ethical. And it was several miles away. And we kind of stood around for a little while going, oh, my God, what are we going to do? We're in a remote area, probably not going to get caught. But being the unluckiest guy in the field, I said to the guy, look, we might as well just go back and get it. Let's just save a hassle. So the guy drove back, and a half an hour later, after dark, came back and with the case. So what was the only ethical part of that activity was me following a law. It wasn't a safety issue. We could have easily put it in the back of the truck. And by the way, hunters are not yearning to have their guns uncased. Cases are protection to bumping and all of that. But there are times where it's important to have it out. If I'm duck hunting, if I have to stick it in a case, now I am inviting rust. I use a sock. Fine. Now I use a sock. But now it's bumping around. There are just some inconsistencies here that we want to try and resolve with this bill. And it's really only centered on the field when a gun is uncased most of the time anyway.
Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, last fall I had dogs and my sheep. They killed five of them. And I saw them going across the field, and I drove my pickup down to the end of the field, and they were moving along. I got my gun out of the case, which was behind the pickup seat. And by the time I got the shells out of the glove compartment and got the gun loaded, the dogs had disappeared into the neighbor's cornfield. Last Friday night, that was last fall when that happened, last Friday night I came home from the Capitol, and there were three more dead sheep in my yard. Dog attack. Two more were so badly wounded I had to euthanize them. Saturday morning, last Saturday, 2 days ago, I got up, put my suit on, necktie, got ready to go to two Republican conventions. When I walked outside the house and I looked down toward the barn, here come these same two dogs again, the same two I'd seen last fall.
And if I could have killed them last fall, they wouldn't have killed the five sheep that they killed on Friday. And so then I went to my pickup truck, got the gun back out of the case again, fumbled around with the shells, got the thing loaded, got down to the barn. And fortunately, this time I was able to unload 16 rounds on two dogs.
They're not eating any sheep now, are they?
But what I'd really like to have as a farmer with predator problems, I'd like to be able to have a gun that's readily available, loaded, and ready to go under certain conditions. And I know last year there was a guy with 1,500 ewes in southeastern Minnesota that has a lot of coyote troubles. And his point is that if you can carry a loaded gun in downtown Minneapolis or any city in this state with a handgun permit, why can't he carry a loaded rifle on his own farm? So I'm supporting what Senator Chaudhry has here, only I'd like to go one step further and let those farmers that have predator problems carry a loaded rifle in their pickup truck so they're ready.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Dill, I mean, they do that in North Dakota. That's allowed. You're allowed to have a round in the chamber. I've hunted there.
Montana,
too. And some of the information that we've heard, in the magazine, not the chamber. And what we've heard from some of the statistics is that there is no appreciable public safety issue. But we're not proposing to go that far here.
Senator Ingebretson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I didn't know we were going to talk about machine guns here today, but let's move on to something a little bit different. Minnesota Waterfowl Association supports the Deer Hunters Association, supports it. Somebody from retired from the DNR. Where does the DNR stand? And I'd also like to know where the Sheriff's Association, Chief's Association, maybe you said that already. Is there somebody here that could testify?
Senator Ingebretson, I'm about to ask if there's anybody else for or against. So as soon as Senator Chaudhry's witnesses are done, we'll make room at the table for others. Thank you, Mr. Schultz. Thank you, Mr. McMillan. Others here who would like to testify either for or against the measure before us? Seeing none, Senator Ingebretson, did you have a question for Senator Chaudhry?
No, I don't. Mr.
Chair, to your question, it was my understanding, and don't quote me exactly, it was my understanding that there was law enforcement concerns about the original bill that was heard in the House Game and Fish Committee. It was amended, and as such, trust but verify that a lot of those concerns, if not all, have been allayed. And it's my understanding that the bills have proceeded through the House, two House Public Safety Committees on voice votes.
Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to hear from the DNR.
Someone from the DNR willing to speak to this issue? Mr. Meyer, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. For the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. A lot of the testimony today focused on our report, which was very pointed language that came through the legislature directing us to examine certain things dealing with uncased firearms, and the questions in the report focus on uncased and loaded. The language that has been amended and moving through the process does correct some of those situations, but while we aren't formally opposing this bill at this point in time, if the goal is to reduce the barriers that hunters are having out in a field, or a field, I should say, perhaps in a boat, chasing wounded waterfowl, or coming in and out of the field, it might be best off to address those individual issues that way rather than to throw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak. Our one concern is that a person leaving their deer shack with their deer rifle in the rack of their pickup truck, while legal to be driving around their deer camp, as they drive home and they go through cities that have restrictions on firearms or ordinances, they will be breaking the law more now coming through the cities. I know people will say, well, there's always a patchwork of ordinances and regulations, but a person driving around with an unloaded firearm on the front of their ATV
in the racks of their guns and things like that? What kind of perception are we setting up for people? It's not a safety issue, but we will continue to preach case guns and firearms at every and all opportunity, but it is a matter of making sure people are not set up to fail and that we're providing the access and the security where we can.
Lots to get through, committee. Any other questions? Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. Chairman, I have an amendment, and I also have a question.
Which would you like to do first?
I'd like to do the amendment first. Mr. Chairman, Senator Chaudhry, I'm not making any substantive change. I'm just making a kind of a stylistic. On page 2, line 3, after transport, insert in a motor vehicle, because we don't really say what we're in what we are transporting, so I would add in a motor vehicle. And then on page 2 again, line 4, and this is just so it reads a little better, at least I was initially confused when I read this, delete unless and insert except when.
Line 4?
Mr. Chair, maybe a question Chaudhry. For Council Moore. If we say motor vehicle, is that a definitional term that is would exclude some things?
Mr. Knopf, in
Mr. Chairman, Senator Chaudhry, no, it's a very broad term. It includes boats and any motorized vehicle. Senator Fredrickson, I talked to him about the amendment before he offered it. If you look, the restrictions currently say a person, if you look on 1.30, a person may not transport a firearm in a motor vehicle unless the firearm is. So you're accepting someone from that restriction. And it would seem to make sense that it would be to make transport in a motor vehicle because that's the prohibition that you're accepting this from.
Okay. Senator Saxog, to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'd ask Senator Fredrickson, what about watercraft? Are you
Senator Fredrickson?
They're included.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Saxog, they're included in the definition of okay. Vehicle.
Mr. Chair, Senator Fredrickson, golf carts.
Mr. Chairman, I think I'll just read the definition. It's not very long.
Give us a few definitions.
Just motor vehicle means a self-propelled vehicle or a vehicle propelled or drawn by a self-propelled vehicle that is operated on a highway, on a railroad track, on the ground, in the air, in the water or in the air.
Did we want to hear from those dogs down in Senator Dill's district? I'm sorry. Senator Dill, a question?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Knopf, does self-propelled mean... mean somebody with a paddle? Or how about a bicycle or a horse?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Dill, we don't have a definition of self-propelled, but I think it's it means that it would not take any specific work by the person operating the vehicle to move it forward.
So somebody in a duck boat, somebody in a duck boat with a paddle is not allowed to have an uncased weapon.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Sir Gill,
Mr. Knopf.
I don't think so. I mean, that's not self-propelled. Self-propelled is a motor.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, I don't think I like Senator Fredrickson's amendment because it narrows it down to, you know, after all, we were trying to get people to use bicycles more, right? And paddle.
Senator Chaudhry, do the amendment.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Chair, Senator Dill, it is not illegal to have an uncased firearm in a boat with a paddle,
right.
A canoe, because that's not a motor vehicle. The current prohibition is only on motor vehicles. And so I guess if it doesn't matter. I appreciate your concern, but it doesn't matter because if a bicycle is considered a motor vehicle, we are allowing it under this bill. If it was never a motor vehicle in the first place, then it would not the activity would not have been prohibited in the first place.
Good explanation, Senator Chaudhry. To the amendment on 2.3, after transport, insert in a motor vehicle. On 2.4, strike unless and insert except when. To that amendment, other questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Question, Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Chaudhry. On page 1, line 5, we're striking outdoors. And on line 6, outdoors are... This prohibits somebody from possessing a crossbow outdoors during the open season for any game. I think by striking outdoors, we would be allowing somebody to have a crossbow outdoors and also have it armed.
Mr. Knopf?
Well, Mr. Chairman, it does say not armed with a bolt, but you could have the bolt or arrow in place. And as I understand it, that provision was in place to prohibit people from even having them during those seasons where they can't be used. I guess I'm not sure why it's being stricken in this bill.
Senator Chaudhry?
Possession is not what you're necessarily using.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Chair, we're not. We can't think of a particular reason why that was in there. So if you want to reinstate the
Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chairman, somebody might have been thinking, since now for firearm seasons people can use crossbows, but we did, when that provision was put in place a few years ago, we did put in a provision saying we'd not withstood this section so that this doesn't apply if you're hunting big game with a crossbow during the firearm season. But what this would do is open the door to even carrying one out in the field during the archery season, too.
Senator Fredrickson.
Chairman, I would move on page 1, lines 5, reinstate the stricken outdoors, and on line 6, reinstate the stricken or.
We have an amendment before us. Senator Chaudhry, did you want to speak to it? Okay. We are putting back in outdoors or on line 5 and 6 on page 1. To that amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Move the bill.
Other questions? If not, Senator Chaudhry would move Senate file 1225 as amended to be recommended to pass and re-referred to Judiciary, I believe. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Dibble, I think we will take you next. And that is Senate File 1624.
I didn't think about your meeting. That was like that.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 1624 is a bill that relates to Hennepin County and its collection of solid waste fees that go into its solid waste fund. And, Mr. Chair, what this bill seeks to do, the solid waste and hazardous waste fund, what this bill simply seeks to do is to allow a more flexible use of those dollars that exist in that fund for Hennepin County. Right now, the dollars are directed to solid waste type related activities within Hennepin County's environmental services. And frankly, Mr. Chair and members, this has to do with the need for funding for the wide array of services that Hennepin County Environmental Services provide that relate to air, water, and land quality environmental issues. And so, Mr. Chair, this simply seeks a slightly more flexible use of those dollars. It will allow for about $700,000 in property tax that's now used to support some of those other services in that particular agency to be used for other reasons that are found throughout the county. Some of the services that Environmental Services carries out include identification of natural resources, site development for watersheds, wetland and stream water quality monitoring. It's part of implementing the Wetland Conservation Act, technical assistance to landowners on soil issues, erosion, sediment control, stormwater, et cetera, and some of their work around pesticide and fertilizer application. Mr. Chair, with us we have Peter McLaughlin from Hennepin County, Hennepin County Commissioner, who can also share some thoughts.
Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much, and members. I'm Peter McLaughlin. I am chair of Hennepin County's Intergovernmental Committee, and I'm here today to urge your support for this amendment to the Hennepin County statute. We have a separate section within statutes, 383B, that would permit a more integrated approach to our environmental programming, the funding of environmental programming. We believe that trying to we deal with our solid waste issues. It's a complex set of activities in which we engage that include the generation of steam and the generation of electricity, as well as the traditional recycling and also the treatment or handling of household hazardous waste. This would just permit us to use the revenues that we collect from various activities associated with those solid waste activities to be used for other environmental purposes that would maintain our ability to provide those services without having to use property tax in what everyone admits is a very tough tough budgetary season that we're in right now.
Mr. McLaughlin, you're looking for some flexibility, basically. Is that the bottom line?
Mr. Chairman, that is the bottom line.
Do you have some other environmental services in policy that you can refer to so that we kind of know that the money's going to be spent in those areas?
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. We do. We have programs that we're funding, the staffing for our inspection of licensed pesticides and fertilizer applicators to make sure that those are not polluting the environment. We also do lake and stream monitoring programs. And it's our position that if you don't do the monitoring, you don't know, you know, where the problems are. So we're trying to keep track of that with these with property taxes right now, and this would allow use of these funds, the solid waste funds.
Other questions for Senator Dibble or Mr. McLaughlin? Did we need other testimony there at the table? Or? Where is this?
Here's the answer question.
Senator Dibble, do you know where this goes from here?
I believe, Mr. Chair, probably we have to go to finance.
Oh, you're pointing there, and I was looking there.
Yeah. So, Mr. Chair, I'll move Senate File 1624 be recommended to pass and referred to finance.
Oh, I'm sorry. Any others who would like to testify in favor or against? Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I represent the National Solid Waste Management Association. Although we'd seen the bill, we had not seen the explanation as to where the funds were going to be used, and wonder if the author or perhaps someone from Hennepin County can explain what the original purposes and statute were for the uses of this money, since it comes from Solid and Hazardous Waste Fund. And looks like a pretty broad use of it in the future, and it concerns us if the original money was intended for solid and hazardous waste programs, that in fact we'll be using this for a much larger variety of programs in the future.
Mr. McLaughlin, to that point, or Senator Dibble?
Mr. Carnival is actually correct. Mr. McLaughlin can answer.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Carnival, the intention here is to try to provide this an integrated approach to our environmental activities, and that originally we were in the silo of solid waste, and we think that an expansion of flexibility in the use of the funds to deal with mercury monitoring and other things, which in fact are the result of improper, for example, there's still some unregulated stacks that are burning in downtown Minneapolis and other places. And so this would allow for the monitoring of stream qualities for things like mercury. And so this is an expansion, but I think it's an expansion that's consistent with the original intent of the law.
Other questions? Mr. Carnival.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Might I ask how much is in the fund currently and how much would be diverted?
One of us should have thought of that. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. McLaughlin.
Mr. Chairman, I think Senator Dibble indicated that there's $700,000 a year in property taxes that is being used, and that is the extent of the amount of money that could be tapped from the fund, $700,000, on a budget of approximately $65 million a year in the department.
Mr. Carnival?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner. My only reaction is that from a hauler standpoint, we collect these fees, and the customers of the haulers are the ones that pay the fees. We don't collect the fees if they're property taxes, but these are solid waste fees intended for solid waste purposes. It's certainly the prerogative of the committee to expand that role, but there's always a concern when waste fees intended for solid waste purposes are expanded for other purposes that are beyond the intended use of the fees in the first place for the institution of that fee. So I just want to express our opinion on that.
I appreciate your comments. Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, some of this, of course, is revenue that we generate from the steam and the electricity production at the downtown garbage burner.
Members, just so you're clear, we're expanding the use of this money, and I think that's been made perfectly clear here. So, with that, Senator Dibble renews his motion that Senate File 1624 be recommended to pass and be referred to Finance. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion prevails. I believe we have time for Senator Coring if he is ready, and we will move in that direction.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Before you have Senate File 1314. I'm just going to give a brief opening statement here. As we all know, we've got Camp Ripley, which is a wonderful training facility. It actually is in my district. Over the last several years, we've been trying to have a buffer around Camp Ripley to protect Camp Ripley into the future so that we can continue to use this as a training facility. There's been other facilities in other states. I can't name them off the top of my head. I was in a meeting several years ago where these facilities actually had a lot of people that built homes alongside these facilities, and there was so much growth that eventually the people said, no more training, no more firing, and those facilities were closed down. We don't want that to happen here at Camp Ripley. For the sake of our men and women that are serving in the military so that we have a training facility that they can train at. So I don't know who wants to go first. Sorry. Okay. Go ahead, and I'll just turn it over to this. How do you pronounce your name? Krasila?
Krasinka.
Joe Krasinka from the DNR.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Yes. Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Joe Krasinka. I'm with the Department of Natural Resources. I'm the regional director for DNR's Central Region. We are very supportive of this bill, both ourselves and the Minnesota National Guard, and we'll have the Guard speak to this in just a moment. But the program itself has teamed up natural resource agencies like the Department, like the Board of Water and Soil Resources, with the National Guard to form an opportunity to create a buffer around Camp Ripley, as Senator Coring stated. It's a unique opportunity for us because it creates a very large amount of contiguous open space. The camp itself is 57,000 acres, and this large buffer, if we were able to achieve easements or fee title acquisitions, would be another 110,000 acres. I mean, it's never going to be quite that large, but it does create a tremendous opportunity for open space, habitat, and providing a buffer for the fort. The department is currently involved in the program and has been for 3 years. Where we've run into some difficulty is the department and the commissioner has the authority to purchase easements through a very specified manner, and that manner requires a full appraisal of the property as it sits, and then a second appraisal of the property if the easement were taken out, and then the difference between those two appraisals is the determined estimate of the value of the easement. The difficulty is that these appraisals take a very long time to get. It has been our experience with this program that the average time to get the two appraisals and work through things from a willing landowner coming forward and saying that they would be willing to allow the purchase of an easement, a conservation easement, has been 13 months. The shortest has been 6 months. Landowners get extremely frustrated in trying to deal with this. What they would prefer is an opportunity for someone to sit down with them and in some sort of fair way say, this is the amount of money that we would be able to offer you. And that's what this proposal does. It gives the department the authority only within this ACUB area, Army Compatible Use Area, to purchase easements from willing sellers for as directed in a formula which would be specified in the law, which is there. It's 60% of the most current assessed value of the land as done by the county would be the basic conservation easement, which is a purchase of development rights, and then 70% if the easement included the opportunity for public access. Maybe with that, I'd let the National Guard speak.
Welcome to the committee.
Committee member, Chairman, members, my name is Command Sergeant Major Dan Smith. I'm the Camp Ripley Post Operations Sergeant Major, also the full-time Command Sergeant Major at Camp Ripley. Minnesota Army National Guard is lucky because of Camp Ripley. We have a premier training facility. Rivals most of active duty posts. Our soldiers are allowed to train 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, year-round. But the problem is our training is noisy. Artillery guys like to pull the lanyards and see their big guns go boom. Tankers like to fire. Engineers like to blow things up. With that noise comes complaints. With the ACUB program, it allows that buffer to be there, thus become a good neighbor. The senator brought up an instance, Camp Robinson, Arkansas, also called PEC, our Professional Education Center, down in Little Rock, Arkansas. When that camp was first developed, there was no encroachment. Now the international airport is right there. Planes take off and fly directly over the small arms range at PEC, causing those guys to quit firing. While the plane flies over, once the plane is gone, then they can continue firing. That really interrupts their training. Same thing at Camp Ripley. We don't have that problem. We don't have to stop firing. This program is very successful, and if we can streamline it, make it on board, people more popular with it, this would be a great asset to the Minnesota Army National Guard.
German?
Well, first of all, I can't remember a time when the Guard has been before the Environment Committee. So this has been it's a wonderful new step.
Thank you.
So thank you for being here. In fact, we heard a little bit about this issue in the Veterans Committee and Senator Vickerman's committee, and we talked about some of the buffering programming you had done at Camp Ripley with Bowser.
Yes.
And so that is, I offered at that time, whatever the Environment Committee can do, by all means, request it. And apparently you were very quick to the response.
Sure,
here is a question I have. On the map, what's the 1, 2, 3, 4? It's on the back of our information sheets.
Right. Those attempt to identify some priority areas for the Department of Natural Resources. Those were laid out early on in the process based on natural resource opportunities that were there. What we're doing is we're pairing up our interests along with the National Guard's interest. The Guard is obviously interested in buffering those areas where the most noise is, where the noise corridors come from the ranges. We're interested in where there is the highest natural resource values.
And Mr. Chairman, could I make a comment too?
Sure.
Mr. Chairman, if you would look, I can't tell you exactly where. Right above that number one, about an inch above that number one, right next to Camp Ripley, Crow Wing State Park is actually along that area, a very pristine area there. We have bought a couple of 40s, or the DNR has bought a couple of 40s expanding Crow Wing State Park along that area too. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So is it the long-term goal of the department and maybe in this whole with Bowser as well to have all this area be a buffer?
Mr. Chairman, it is a long-term goal to have this be a buffer. It is a voluntary program, though. Mm-hmm. My property is actually not right in this buffer area. It's just a little bit to the east, but let's just say hypothetically I lived in this area. I don't have to participate in this. I can develop my property. Mm-hmm. But there are some people that live in this area. They'd like to keep their property undeveloped, and this gives them some money to be able to keep their property, and I think it's a great thing. I don't necessarily like perpetual easements myself personally, But as long as it's a voluntary program, I see no problem with it.
And then what is the is there a relationship then with the Army and these lands here that necessitate this bill?
What the bill simply does is right now the Department of Natural Resources has to go through this formalized appraisal process. What the bill does is it allows us to move forward with a formula where we could sit down with the landowner, look at their most current assessed value, and say, if these are the acres that you're interested in putting in, here is what we would have to offer you. One thing I did not mention also is that this is done with federal dollars that are coming from the Department of Army.
Mr. Chairman, I was also going
to... So that's why we need this change. You need to be allowed to apply that formula to the federal dollars that are being used. Is that correct?
To be able to use that formula as we sit down with individual landowners. Otherwise, as it's played out, with the current authorities the department has, it has to go through this formalized appraisal process, and that has taken months and months, and as we've said, the average has turned out to be 13 months, and landowners just become extremely frustrated with that.
Are the landowners frustrated with the length of time, or are they frustrated with the result of the appraisals from the DNR?
With the length of time more than anything, but occasionally the appraisal.
Okay. And then my last question was, and I think you may have alluded to it, is all of the easements purchased in this zone will be federal dollars?
That's correct.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Is it Army dollars, Sergeant?
Mr. Chairman,
It's green dollars.
Pardon?
It's just green dollars. I don't know where it's coming from. Okay. I believe it's from...
Mr. Chairman, it is from the Pentagon or it is from the military. It's the federal government wants to preserve this training facility, and they don't want what has happened to other training facilities to happen to this one with the increased urbanization of people building around it, and that's what we're trying to preserve that area so there's less people complaining, really. And I will also say that Camp Ripley is a great neighbor to have. They actually do all they can to accommodate the neighbors. And like I'd say, this is federal dollars. And I thought it was $10 million to start with that came. I don't know if it's on here, but I thought it was $10 million to start with. Yep, $10,731,000. And this will continue to – and the DNR is actually facilitating this.
Sure.
Buffer program.
Mr. Chairman.
And we'll get to everyone's questions. I welcome with open arms partnership with the military in these efforts, and we thank you for the initiative. Senator Saxhog, Olson, and then Dibble?
Well, Mr. Chair, you're going to take questions, but I would move Senate File 1314.
Okay.
When you're ready.
Right. Additional discussion, Senator Olson?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, just wanted to clarify this little gray spot that sells. Southwest of number 4, is that the city of Randall? And does the border of Randall come actually within that 3 mile?
Yes, ma'am. That is the city of Randall.
So, Mr. Chairman and sir, does the is there part of the boundaries of Randall within that 3 mile buffer?
It does look like that on the map. Yes, ma'am.
So, okay, Mr. Chairman, and then the blocks that have got a distinct border around them that are spotted around there, what are they?
I don't know where she's talking about.
Welcome to the committee, and there's another committee getting ready to come in, so we should make it brief.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mark Houck, Community Assistance Specialist, Department of Natural Resources, located in Sauk Rapids. Mr. Chair and members, those polygons are actually holdings of Camp Ripley that are physically separated from the unit.
Okay. Senator Dibble?
Well, thanks, Mr. Chair. I was just curious. I see the language is permissive. Does that imply that the appraisal process might still be available to those landowners, but this is an alternative to go with the county assessed value, or are you going completely with
it
the
county?
It
would still be available. The National Guard would like us, however, to be using the formula process.
Thanks.
Senator Fredrickson?
Mr. Chairman, page 1, line 13, I'd move to delete perpetual and insert permanent, and that is now the customary and preferred usage. And Senator Coring said he doesn't like perpetual. Maybe he likes permanent.
I don't like permanent either.
On the motion, discussion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment's adopted. So Senator Saxog moves that Senate file 1314 as amended be recommended to pass. One thing, is it need to go to another committee?
No, it's my understanding it would go right to the floor, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. And if you would like to do that, Senator Coring, we can move it on its own.
Yep.
If you'd prefer that it be laid over for the lands bill, we can do that too.
Mr. Chairman, I would prefer that it go on its own.
Okay.
This is extremely important to the military.
All right. We'll be happy to honor your wishes. Everyone understand the motion? Discussion, seeing none. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Committee is in recess.
Till 6:30. I'm still glad we did it today.
I know.
And I did that. I don't know why I did it. Okay.
Got dibbles to take care of.
Is that your dad's housewares?
No, my dad's, their farm.
Apples haven't been very controversial in the past.